America, or so says their national ID announcement that they gave on networkusa.org. Now, how does a special interest group have the responsibility to do whatever it can to improve public safety? And is there an ulterior motive behind there? Of course there is. If Americans' driver's licenses, enhanced with loads of stored personal information, were the de facto national ID, the AAMVA would become more powerful and influential. So there you have it. Another group that's supporting the national ID card simply wants more power.
And of course, our friend Alan Dershowitz, he has some quotes that makes you wonder what side of the fence he swings on. Okay. Four Arab-looking men reading the Quran are much less suspicious if they have these cards and could just slash them through the card readers. But I think that once again goes back to our earlier statement that if somebody has the financial backing, they can forge pretty much anything they want to. And I don't see how that makes us any safer or that makes us any feel any better about anybody who, quotes and quotes, slashes a card. Okay. Another quote. There is a question to the right of anonymity. I don't believe we can afford to recognize such a right in this age of terrorism. What kind of statement is that? That a right to anonymity and we can't afford that? Where in the heck are we, Canada? I think here in America we have that right. Well, at least we better. Okay. Another quote, anyone who had the card could be allowed to pass through airports and buildings security much more expeditiously. And anyone who opted out of the card could be examined much more closely. What's this much more closely part? Are we going to have, like, drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors and terrorist units and negotiation units all interrogating this guy for about an hour to make sure that he's examined much more closely? Or are we just talking about the old rubber glove treatment? Another quote from him. A national ID card would not prevent all threats of terrorism. Duh. That's the whole point that we're trying to get at. It doesn't, national ID card does not prevent terrorism. And he admits that. So the fact that he's still for it, you just have to scratch your head. But I think we'll be able to clear that up here in a minute. Okay. His last quote that we're going to have is a little bit of a longer one. It says, from a civil liberties perspective, I prefer a system that takes a little bit of freedom from all to one that takes a great deal of freedom and dignity from a few, specifically since those few are usually from a racially or ethnically disfavored group. A national ID card would be much more effective in preventing terrorism than profiling millions of men simply because of their appearance. I think it's pretty obvious what Alan Dershowitz has to gain from a national ID card is simply the forwarding of his socialist agenda to move America to a socialist nation.
And there you have it. That is a basic introduction to the problems of national ID cards, so you'll have a better idea when we start discussing it in a few minutes. And when we get back from the break, we will finish discussing it.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM. Upcoming in the next couple of weeks, we have WSU football coach Rob Akey will be in February 11th. That's next Monday from 8 to 9 o'clock to talk about football and the new recruits. Coming up in about 28 minutes, we have Rhino, the sports dude. And 8:30 today, we'll have an intramural sports update. On the 25th of February, scheduled to appear is City Supervisor John Sherman and the Pullman Transit Director Rod Thornton to talk about the state of the transit system and the city budget. And in early March, we have scheduled Glenn Johnson, the PA voice of the WSU Cougar football team and men's basketball. We will continue with the Peter Eichmann Show and more information in a moment.
Conversations. The fire glistens in the noon heat. You tread across the grass, up onto and down off of the concrete abutments. Mirage on the highway, ghosts in the tunnel, the dark cave. Out into the blinding light of day, at breakneck speed, every bolt rumbling. Glistening highway mirage groans, slick surface careening into first a small mammal, then screeching along the guardrail, scraping paint and throwing sparks like sheets of pure terror for 400 yards, over and over, with one final back and forth rocking motion coming to rest. Wait! The beautiful paint job hopelessly marred. A small creature, screeching whistles of steam blowing off on its back, wheels spinning like a cinema classic. The door sags open, a man covered in blood drops to 3 feet or so to the pavement. The car still rattling and shaking as into the mind of its own, unwilling to die. The man, 40-ish, also after a time, an agonizingly painful period of time, is also unwilling to die. Suddenly all is quite quiet, and there in the sunlight on the highway. But what can I do? I cannot move, everything is about broken. Blood everywhere, mixing with oil and gas. What's moving? Must turn my head. Pain. White light. Blinded. Some guy then kneeling in the blinding mirage of white light. All my strength to... Screaming now, help me please. He tried to tamp out a bit of the burning ember that had leapt from the wreck onto his grimy coat sleeve. Coughing blood. What's happened? He's inching towards the tree. He strode off into the woods with the animal that still lives. He didn't glance back at all. Still out ghosting the road. Death on the highway. Words crumble around me and fall at the weight of heaven. I cannot move. And beneath the great weight, I cannot see. My eyes are blinded. I am in the darkness. That's it.
You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM. We're back, and we're going to be talking about national ID cards. And if you missed the first half hour of the show, then you missed our little brief introduction on what it was and why people are trying to get them. Now we're going to talk a little more in depth about what we don't like about them and why people are trying to control you and track you. To begin with, one of the major, major problems to reemphasize with the national ID card is all of your information is on one little tiny plastic card. Your life, your medical history, your family history, your fingerprint, your iris scan, your bank accounts, your physical description, any tickets you've had, your entire criminal history, if you have one, everything is on there, your social security number. Everything of every intimate detail about your life gets put on this little piece of plastic, and every time you swipe it for everything that you have to do, anytime you have to present an ID, you have to get your card swiped. And every single time you do that, you're divulging, or possibly divulging, the entire content of that card to whoever's swiping it. You go to the movies, they ask to see your ID to verify your age, they swipe it. All of a sudden, the movies could have your entire medical history. Why do we need that again? Well, we don't. If you look at some of the major people that are involved, that are trying to do it, they're just trying to push their own political agendas, get more power, power and control over your life. Goes back to the thing, the good old government quote, the need to know. They don't have the need to know, and they will never have the need to know. The only reason they're trying to do this is to take away your liberties and your freedoms so that they can control you. If you look at Alan Dershowitz, a well-known socialist Harvard law professor, very socialist, what's he trying to get out of this? Less racial profiling. As if having an ID card makes us all safer. I know I'll feel safer with the government tracking me. I don't know about the rest of you out there. With Alan Dershowitz trying to promote his agenda, it kind of makes one think, if Alan Dershowitz like it, can it be good? Usually the answer is no. No, it cannot. Then you get people like Larry Ellison out there that are just trying to get rich off of it. Do you honestly think that someone who is developing the database software for all of this really cares whether you're more secure or not? They just want the money.
He just wants the money. I think he's taking that quote straight from, what was that, Jerry Maguire? Yeah. Show me the money! Okay, but unfortunately, this whole entire issue is not a laughing matter. We're talking about all of your information held in one database that's accessible because of this little itty-bitty card, this piece of plastic that holds your whole entire life on it. I think that that is a very, very dangerous thing to show. I mean, think about it here on WSU's campus. This is something that we'll talk about more in the future and have a show specifically on, but just think about it. When you're on WSU's campus, you hold an ID card, and that ID card, every time you go into a building and you swipe it and it has one of those little things, you're now being tracked as you move around campus from point A to point B to point C. Wherever you go, they know when you've been there. They can see as you've moved your way around campus. And the scary part about that is anybody who wants to get a hold of this information, they can take a look at it. They can find out about your movements, your normal everyday activities, and they can start making patterns about you. And should they ever want to do anything that's less than correct, such as, oh, I don't know, kidnap you, murder you, rob your place, or whatever else like that, they have a great idea of when you're in, when you're out, where you're going to be, everything else like that. Now, this is just, of course, again, one small piece of information. And in order for them to really do it, they're going to probably have to get a hold of your class schedule, which will let them know when you're in classes, when you're not in classes. They'd probably need to get a hold of this database of where you've been, when you've been there, through this swiping thing. And they would also have to have the opportunity to actually see when you leave the building, not necessarily when you just go there. However, it's that much easier when you have all of this stuff in one centralized database. And that's what this National ID card is about. One centralized database.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, just for a moment, I'd like to touch back on the campus swiping cards that they're starting to initiate around here. And again, like Scott Scooter said, we're going to have a show about that. But just real quick, for all of you who are thinking, well, it's so much easier just to have the plastic card and swipe it. It's so much more convenient. And, you know, it's so much easier than a key, and it's just one card. You just got to think, you know, the next thing, once they get your class schedule, the reason they're doing that, well, it's because, of course, they're only going to allow you in your key to work at certain times of the day or at certain things. So you're still not having full control or full access over it. You know, from 6 to 8 in the morning, your key will work for this door for this class because your class schedule has it. But that's just a little tangent I'm getting off on. Back to the National ID card. The National ID card is so flawed, it's flawed at every level. I mean, let's assume for a second that we actually needed some sort of security measure, a card. Why this National ID card? Why is it more secure than all the other cards in the world that have been forged by every known person? Credit cards are always forged. Well, credit cards have the new smart chip that they'd use for the National ID card. And they're already being forged. Well, that gives me a lot of secure, snuggly, warm feeling inside, knowing that the technology that they're about to implement to make us all safer has already been forged. You know? And then you start
I was on the internet the other day looking around, and I know that there's some places, not here in America, but overseas, where I can actually buy the items necessary in order to forge a card like that.
Oh, absolutely. It's readily available in Europe. And, you know, shipping's not all that expensive from Europe. So you could buy the stuff to forge it yourself. It would almost make it easier. I mean, where do you know that you can buy yourself a fake driver's license? Well, besides getting an affidavit from someone you know and having the state issue one, nothing like having the state give you a fake ID.
Well, I'm just sort of curious, though. Why, you know, we talk about this $3 billion that that it would cost to create these cards. I'm surprised that one of the issues might not be the government going to the people saying, look, it is your requirement to go out and get one of these cards. It is your requirement to go out and pay for one of these cards. We're not going to pay for it out of tax money because of how much it's going to cost. And by us making you go out and get these cards, should you choose not to get one, which I suppose would be your ability to choose not to get one, it would be their ability to lock you up.
Oh, absolutely. They could lock you up. And, you know, everybody always says these cards are going to be voluntary. Yes, very voluntary. As in, if you don't have one, you'll be the outcast that nobody trusts, nobody likes, everybody searches. You ever heard of racial profiling? Well, you know, you don't have the ID card, you're definitely going to be profiled. You're always going to have it harder. You're always going to have it worse off. You're always going to be searched more, suspicious. People are going to think, what does he have to hide? Why is he not doing this? I can't believe it. I feel unsafe, unsecure. And you know, the funny thing is that these cards, which will give you that safe, secure feeling, according to the government and Alan Dershowitz and everything, it's all a false sense of security. People will feel safer, and yet these cards are easier to forge than ever.
Yeah, and once again, how is a layman or even a law enforcement official supposed to be able to tell that a card is forged? I mean, the idea is that all this information is held in this card on this smart chip that will make it so it's quote unquote impossible or nearly impossible to forge. But if I'm a law enforcement officer, or if I'm working at the airport gates, or you know, I'm doing, say, stadium security, because I'm sure that would probably be something you'd have to scan to get into a stadium or any kind of other public place. I'm sure this will be the new de facto way of getting in to show that you are who you say you are and putting your thumb on the little platter. If I'm one of those people working there and somebody swipes their little card and puts their little thumb on the pad and it says, hey, this person's found in our database, I'm not going to think twice about it. But how do I know that card and that information was not hacked in and forged in? And in reality, this is not some nice guy named Peter Eichmann. It is indeed an evil person such as Mr. Dershowitz.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't know. That's just it. But that's just one of the many flaws in many levels. That was just assuming that we even needed one, which we don't. We don't need one. I mean, what good does it know? What good does it do us to know who someone is? I mean, they have things called sleeper cells. That's where someone from a terrorist organization comes over to your country. They're legal. They have no history. They have no connection. They stay in your country for 10 years. Then when the signal or word is sent out, they become active and start blowing things up. Now, what good does it do us to know exactly who they were? So I scan my card, put my thumb down. They say, that was your Peter Eichmann. Well, then the building blows up. Well, I guess they'll be able to say, well, we know Peter Eichmann blew it up. That's about the only good it will do us. And that's not worth all the insecurity and invasion of privacy and rejection of liberties and freedoms that they'll be taking us and depriving us of. It's not worth any of that. It's just absolutely appalling to think that the government is trying to pass off something where they can track every single aspect of our lives as a security measure to make us safer.
Well, I don't know. I've never felt safer when Big Brother is watching me every moment of the way. You know, I'd hate to think that I could drive down the road without my car being videotaped, or that I could stand on some street corner and not be videotaped, or that I can buy something and not be videotaped, or actually have my transaction saved in some sort of database that is easily called up at a later time to sort of put together a picture of my life. I mean, as with a crime, for instance, in order for a crime to be solved, the people in charge, namely the cops, they go in and they get pieces of data, little pieces of information that put together a complete picture. And just like with these databases, there's all these little itty-bitty pictures of your life. Now, you put all of those pieces of paper together, it's sort of like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. Sooner or later, a picture of who you are comes out. Now, what happens with that picture of who you are? Who uses it for what gain? And why would it be a mandatory thing that the government makes us put our fingerprint on a card, or make us put our retinal scan on some sort of card? That, to me, is a very scary prospect, to think that this information about me is going to be forced from me without a warrant, without me having committed a crime, without me having done a single thing. I will be forced to put my finger on some sort of scanner so they could scan it, to look into some sort of little laser beam retina scanner and have that scanned, to have my face scanned so they have a facial image, or my hand scanned so they have a hand image of what my hand looks like. All this stuff is information the government doesn't need to know.
Absolutely. Government has no right to know that. And, you know, we touched on it briefly in the opening, but who verifies the data? Who says, yes, I am Peter Eichmann? Who checks that, yes, this is my wife, or this is my girlfriend, that is my medical history? Who checks it for validity? I mean, so everyone who has some sort of false data now is going to get a national ID card, which will confirm their false data for the rest of time. I mean, who verifies all this? And another issue that was touched on around this same topic area is, in 1998, there was a study conducted that showed that 70% of all credit reports contain errors, and 29% of those are serious errors that could actually prevent someone or a family from receiving a loan. Now, let me lay that out for you. Private industry can't even get it right, and they don't have all the bureaucracy to go through. They don't have all the paperwork to go through. Their only motivation is profit, and they can't even get it right. What makes you think a government that is bogged down with paper and bureaucracy and power plays and politics and senators trying to vie for more power here and there, what makes you think that they're going to get it right for your best interest? I mean, it's ridiculous to think that this could ever work and that this is any sort of security measure. It's a complete invasion of privacy.
But thanks to the Peter Eichmann Show and your host, Scooter and Peterman, we have come to show you the light. We would like to conclude with a couple statements. One, fear a government which fears your anonymity. The inverse of freedom and liberty is slavery and control. And to quote Scott McDonald from his article, Uncle Sam Has All Your Numbers, don't be fooled into debating the issue of privacy. Protecting privacy is not the issue. Blackmail artists will protect your privacy as long as you comply with their demands, and the government is no different. The focus of this debate must be on liberty and freedom. The question must be, does the government have any right whatsoever to maintain databases of information about free citizens? No, they don't, not in a free society. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM, brought to you by the ASWSU. Coming up in about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you will have Rhino Sports. And at 8:30, we have the Intramural Office talking to us about the Intramural Sports Update. And between the 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock hour, we'll have Tech Talk with John Vaccara, the Daily Evergreen online editor. Please stay tuned. You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM, brought to you by the ASWSU. In the studio, we have Rhino. We're going to talk about sports, the Super Bowl, intramural basketball, WSU men's basketball, and their win over the Huskies, their first Pac-10 win of the season. Woo! And finally, WSU club ice hockey last Wednesday. Our own Peterman went to the game and saw what was going on there. Got a PSA for everybody. Studio 51 Visual Art and Exhibition Sale featuring 5 WSU Fine Arts students is underway until Monday, February 11th. And if you'd like to go this Saturday at 8 p.m. for only a few bucks, you can view the exhibit with live music by Circus, Freeform, and Soundscrew. Studio 51 is located at 414 East Main Street, and I assume that's Pullman. Okay, I'd like to introduce everybody to Rhino. He's our sports guy, and he'll be in each week to talk sports with Scooter and the Peter Man.
Hey, this is Rhino. Everybody knows the Super Bowl went on yesterday, and we're going to be doing a little bit of talking about that. We all know that the Super Bowl was meant to be the St. Louis Rams winning this by a lot. In fact, they were favored by 14 points, but we were in for a surprise from the start. In fact, we had a pretty ominous start to this whole thing. In fact, in the introductions, we had St. Louis Rams coming out as individual players, and when New England was announced, they actually came out as a team. First time in Super Bowl history that's actually been done, and that shows how well this team's been built around each other. started out with a quick field goal by St. Louis, and we went into the second quarter, but it seemed like it was going to be a really low-scoring game. There wasn't much action going on. It kind of reminded me of watching last year's game at the start between Baltimore and Tennessee. They kind of went for a slugfest on the defensive end where the quarterbacks actually did not do much at all. Which brings me to a point that if a quarterback is going to win MVP for a Super Bowl, he really does have to get the stats to deserve it.
Okay, that was my biggest disappointing thing. Between all the glasses of water that I was drinking, I was quite disappointed in two things. First off, it seemed like every time that New England got the ball off of a punt or a kickoff, Brady, the great team leader, was never able to do anything with it. It took the defense going out there, getting some sort of turnover, getting the whole entire team and the crowd fired up, and then the offense was able to go out there and score a little bit of points. I think they actually scored about 17 off of the turnovers, 17 points off of turnovers, three off of MVP of Super Bowl, Tom Brady's performance.
So let's take a quick look at Tom Brady's stats here. We got 16 for 27 passing for a total of 145 yards and one touchdown. To put it in a little bit of perspective, let's look at the opposing quarterback, Kurt Warner, 28 for 44 with 365 yards. Now, if you're going to compare the quarterbacks, we should have given Kurt Warner the MVP of the Super Bowl. But the real...
What about his interceptions, though?
Oh, well, the interceptions were canceled out by the two touchdowns that he scored for himself. But we need to keep in mind that one of those touchdowns shouldn't have even been going the other way. On the 2-yard line, Kurt Warner went for a sneak in the end zone. He ended up fumbling the ball, and it was ran back for a touchdown, and New England was really celebrating this. This would have put the game out of reach. But it was called back when the officials called holding on one of the offensive linemen.
That's what I was curious about. And maybe you could shed some light on us being the sports dude that you are. How is it that a man, I think it was Marshall Faulk was the running back, he was doing a fake like he had the ball going off to the left-hand side of the field, and the linebacker or defensive guy, whoever it was, went up there to go to tackle the guy, so he put his arms around him, quote-unquote, held him, and all of a sudden it came to the realization, hey, he doesn't have the ball. He wasn't taken all the way to the ground. He was just starting the tackle, and when he realized he didn't have the ball, he let go of the tackle, and that's right about the time when Kurt decided to go to the other side, fumble the ball, and it was run back for a touchdown. Can you explain to me how it is that when somebody does a good fake that they cannot tackle somebody? I mean, are we going to get to the point in the NFL that you have to run alongside somebody for a few minutes and make sure that they really do have the ball before you touch them?
That's a really good point, because what they have in the NFL is called a 5-yard bump zone. And receivers are allowed to be bumped for 5 yards, hit, do whatever you want to the receivers for those 5 yards. And as soon as they get out of them, then you got to back off or you're good call for interference. Now, we all know that Marshall Faulk is the leading receiving running back in the NFL. So he runs out to the flat, you know he's going to get the ball unless you do something about it. On a fake play like this, there should have been no holding called, because he was taken down, fair play. There should have been a touchdown for New England. The game would have been over right there. Well, for us sports fans, that didn't happen.
And I would have also won my office pool. I got hosed on that. All we needed to do was one touchdown. I would have won $5. I put in like $4 into this darn office pool, and I didn't win a darn thing. It was there was the other people that kept on winning on me.
Well, we're going to have to send that into the league so maybe they can refund your money here. They make enough off the Super Bowl and those commercials anyways. Well, it was a good thing for the league, though, that this call was made, because later on in the game it was tied up at 17-17, and New England had to put Brady back in. Now, at this point, Tom Brady had less than 100 yards passing, about 98 to be exact. He goes in there, and he marches down the field.
Marches my rear end. He sort of sputtered down the field. What did they make it, like 50 yards before they ended up having to kick a field goal? My God, I don't think that was an MVP performance. Joe Montana would have been proud.
That's about right. If it hadn't been for Troy Brown and his heroic catches and runs, breaking through tackles and the line of scrimmage, this game would have gone to the Rams. Because you know you put the Rams back on the field with those receivers and just go for the end zone, they have a very good chance of getting a touchdown. So it came down to one play, really, that was the game breaker. Pass, which was called 64, miss out. They actually threw it to Troy Brown. He broke through the line of scrimmage, broke a couple of tackles, and then made it down to about the 35-yard line, where Adam Vinatieri kicked a field goal with 7 seconds to go to win the game. Now, this was exactly what the league would have wanted, a Super Bowl where it was supposed to be a blowout, turns into a great game where the underdog actually wins the game. So we go to the post game, and we find out that Tom Brady is named the MVP. 16 for 27, 145 yards, let me remind you. Now let's go through a couple of the other stats that were in the game. How about Ty Law? Led the entire game with 8 tackles and ran back an interception for 45 yards for a touchdown. Now that turned the momentum of the game. Remember, St. Louis was up 3-0. Ty Law takes this interception back, and New England takes the lead 7-3 going into the second quarter. This was definitely the momentum that the New England Patriots needed, and their defense was sky high after that. Later on, there was another interception, in fact, and a fumble recovery that actually led to 2 more scores. So 17 points for the defense of New England, and 3 points, really, by the offense. So the real MVP of this game should have been the defensive line of the entire New England Patriots.
Preach it, brother.
It could have been, they should have made the decision like that. In fact, if we look at the votes, 19 votes are given out to decide who is the MVP of the Super Bowl. 8 people voted for Tom Brady. That's 8 of 19. 11 people did not.
Sounds like the 40% that voted for Bill Clinton in, what, 1992? The less than majority voted for somebody, yet he gets office. I think that's what happens when you have such a poor performance. And I think both in 1992 and here again in 2002, maybe there's a little bit of a parallel there. What do you think?
Quite possibly could be, because the votes were split between Ty Law, Lawyer Malloy, who also had 7 tackles, and Adam Vinatieri, who had that game-winning field goal.
And let me just jump in real quick, Ryan, and give everybody our phone number. It's 509-335-2207. And if you disagree with us or agree with us, call us up and let us know.
I'm going to give a quick couple of personal opinions here. Now, going into this game, I really wanted the Patriots to either be down by a lot or up by a lot so I could see our own Drew Bledsoe get in there and show exactly what football players are made of. And Tom Brady, I mean, he got a couple of lucky breaks during the season. An Adam Vinatieri field goal in overtime against the Oakland Raiders is the only reason that he even got to the Super Bowl.
Well, what I found really interesting was the stats that they were showing before the game started. They showed Tom Brady, and as a starter in the playoffs, New England was 2-0. And I thought that was sort of funny. I was like, yeah, I guess Tom Brady did start that game, but if it wasn't for Drew Bledsoe, they would not have been 2-0 in the playoffs. They would have put in some husky named Heward, and he would have bowled the game away. You know that no husky could have stood up to what the Cougars did for us or for New England in that game. And I think also Drew Bledsoe, I wanted to see him go to the Seahawks when he left WSU here in 1992. And unfortunately, we got this guy named Rick Meyer, who I think is playing for the CFL now. Or is he even in football? Sorry, I'm picking on Canada today. Anyway, Rick Meyer was a terrible draft choice. But unfortunately, the Seahawks were stuck because they had number 2, not number 1. Drew Bledsoe, of course, went to New England. New England, the owner of the team, has always been a champion of Drew Bledsoe. However, the coach says, no, we're going to stay with Tom Brady. Now, I would like to see them stay with Tom Brady, and I'd like to see Drew Bledsoe go to a team who needs a good quarterback. Now, I'd like to see him go to the Seahawks, but I don't think our general manager will sign him. We have another team, the Dallas Cowboys. They have a good quarterback. I think if they give Ryan Leaf the opportunity, he will be the quarterback of the future. I think he's coming around. Every chance I had to watch a game against, every time I had a chance to watch the Cowboys play, I watched Ryan Leaf. He was trying to make it go. He needs a little bit more time. He's obviously matured a lot since the days of leaving WSU and going to San Diego. He matured here at WSU a little bit. He's maturing a lot more in the NFL. I think given the chance, he will be a good quality starting quarterback. Give him that chance and have it be in Dallas. I think, though, that Drew Bledsoe and the Vikings, the Minnesota Vikings, might be a good fit.
You got a good point there. I mean, Ryan Leaf was thrust in the San Diego Chargers starting lineup immediately after college. Now, you run down the quarterback list of rookies straight out of college that have great careers, and the list is very short. I mean, you want to talk about quarterbacks like Joe Montana, Steve Young. They all had to sit on the bench the first year they got into the pros. In fact, Steve Young sat behind Montana for 3 years. Before that, he was even in the USFL League. I mean, we can talk about quarterback after quarterback. You got Warren Moon back there who had to sit on the bench in Houston when he first came in. I mean, he couldn't even get a starting job. And Ryan Leaf thrust right into the mix. Even Peyton Manning didn't have to go through all that. He didn't even start the first game in. So what we come down to is, what is a good quarterback? A quarterback is somebody who has seen what the pros have to offer. He's seen, he's learned. The coaches have taught him exactly what to do in the NFL. Now we look at Ryan Leaf. He goes into San Diego. He has a really rough start, and there's no sympathy for him. He was expected to go in there and get them to the playoffs. If not that, then the championship. And he failed. I'll admit it, he failed. It ended up like 2-14 the first season he was there, and they did not give him a second chance. They looked for a replacement right away. Now they have Doug Flutie over there. Ryan Leaf is down in Dallas. And Ryan Leaf showed flashes of brilliance at the end of this season for Dallas. I mean, he passed for 300-some yards in one of his games, and he does look like he could be a quarterback of the future. He's still in his 20s. As soon as he gets to his 30s, he could be one of those future quarterbacks. Now, what do we want over in Seattle? Well, we really do need a quarterback. What do we have? We have Matt Hasselbeck. Matt Hasselbeck, come on now. We have a long history of trying quarterbacks out and trying to make them something that they're really not. Right now, we have the chance. The New England Patriots have pretty much flat out said they want Tom Brady back next year. I mean, he's starting the Pro Bowl. He won the MVP for the Super Bowl. There's not much else that fans could want from a quarterback. So Drew Bledsoe is really on the market. Now, what we have to do is win the bidding war. I mean, the bidding war is going to start with the Washington Redskins. They're the richest team out there that really needs a quarterback, and they will spend the money to get it. The money isn't really the issue, though. The real issue is offensive linemen. I mean, if the New England Patriots are going to get anything for Bledsoe, they want offensive linemen. And for once in our lifetime, the Seattle Seahawks have offensive linemen. We have Walter Jones, who's actually in the Pro Bowl this year. He's one of our two representatives. We have John Randall on defense, which brings me to another point. Why is Sean Alexander not on the Pro Bowl team? How can you lead the AFC in touchdowns? That's counting everyone except Marshall Faulk in the NFL, if you want to get real down to it. Second in the NFL in touchdowns, 1,318 yards. He doesn't make the Pro Bowl, but Jerome Bettis, with barely 1,000 yards, does. Jerome Bettis gets injured, and Sean Alexander isn't the replacement? Is there something wrong with his picture, and am I missing this?
He's a Seattle Seahawk. I thought that was simple.
That could be the case, or it could be simply Mike Holmgren's fault. I mean, Sean Alexander wasn't even the number one back coming into the season. Ricky Waters had to get hurt after his first game to get Sean Alexander even in there. And then the 15th game of the season, Waters comes back. Alexander gets benched. Now, the hottest running back in football, Holmgren benches him. Waters goes in, of course. Ricky Waters is one of the greatest running backs of all time. Top 10 in rushing yards total for a career. But he goes in there, and what does he do? He breaks his ankle. Ricky Waters breaks his ankle. So Sean Alexander goes in there, does a couple of great plays towards the end of the game. The Seahawks end up winning. He plays a great game in the season finale, and the Seahawks finished 9-7. Maybe if we'd had Alexander in there as a starter all year, we could have been 10-6, made the playoffs, beat these Rams, who obviously can't stand up to a good defense, and we'd be talking a lot differently right now.
Yeah, we'd be talking like that it would be, I don't know, Trent Dilfer is the MVP of the Super Bowl. I don't think we would have saw Matt Hasselbeck make it through the whole game, because I think Holmgren would have finally pulled him out. However, that's not the case. We're in the real world once again. And I'd just like to point out something else about the difference between Kurt Warner and Tom Brady. As Rhino pointed out, Tom Brady threw 445 yards versus Kurt Warner's 365 yards. I mean, granted, you don't give the MVP to a losing team, typically, just because if he was that valuable, then they would have won, huh? But, you know, a game is more than just one player. One player can make a big difference in the game. And that's why I would say, well, what about the kicker for New England? I think he scored a couple points. He had the pressure on. 6 seconds to go in the biggest game of the year. He had to kick that ball, what, 40-some-odd yards was that? 48 yards and put it through the up. 48 yards, my goodness, Tom Brady really did march him down there, didn't he? Anyway, and he had to put it through the uprights to win that game with seconds to go. It's just like in baseball, hitting that bottom of the ninth grand slam to win the game, a walk-off home run. That was obviously a walk-off field goal that won the game. But, for instance, the yards averaged in passing, Tom Brady on every pass that he threw averaged 5.3 yards. Kurt Warner was averaging 8 yards. Kurt Warner did throw for a touchdown. So did Tom Brady. So each had one touchdown thrown for. The biggest difference is Tom Brady happened to be on a team that won the game for him, and Kurt Warner, all by himself, wasn't able to win a game.
That's a very good point. I mean, where are the days where actually there's a quarterback war going on the field? Either we have two defenses or we have two great quarterbacks. We can go back to like Boomer Esiason and Joe Montana. They put on a great show when the 49ers and Bengals met up back in the early 90s, and that was a great Super Bowl. For any football fan out there who wasn't a direct fan of these two teams, this probably was a great Super Bowl. 17-17 going into the final minute of the game. I mean, what more could you ask for if you're going to watch the entire game?
Well, one thing I'm sort of curious about is I wonder if they could play the final 2 seconds of that game like the Cougars got hosed out of 2 seconds in Rose Bowl 1998. I was watching, and on the replays, I saw it over and over and over again. It appeared that after the ball was well between those uprights, there were still 2 seconds ticking away on that clock. Why did they not have one opportunity to run a ball back off of a kickoff for a touchdown or anything like that? Granted, it would have been a very rare thing for it to happen to run it back, but I thought there were 2 seconds on the clock. And as far as I'm concerned, we now have the Rose Bowl 1998, which is still in limbo because that game has never really been finished. And now Super Bowl is also in limbo because there are 2 seconds on that field waiting to be played.
Well, it seems to me like officials always make mistakes in football. It just seems like they're always the ones that are making the bad call. I mean, if we can think back, Seahawks fans, to a game against the New York Jets a couple of years ago, Vinny Testaverde takes the ball.
You know those white footballs.
He runs up to the end zone, and he trips up. Two people tackle him from behind, and he lands on, like, the one-yard line. I was, like, cheering my butt off, thinking about this as, oh, the Seahawks are going to make the playoffs all right. And then suddenly I see the official on the other sideline with his arms in the air signaling touchdown. The Seahawks are going berserk, and the Jets, they kind of looked surprised that it was called a touchdown. Now, everybody knows that Vinny Testaverde was down on the one-yard line, and this was a blown call. The league never admitted it, but the Seahawks didn't make the playoffs because of this one loss.
And wasn't that a Cougar alumni coach also get fired at the end of that season? Dennis Erickson, that was the end of his 4-year career in Seattle.
That's correct. Yeah, it was sad to see him go, and in come the days of Mike Holmgren. Now, he might have been a really good coach over in Green Bay, and he might be a good coach now, but he's a terrible general manager. The players he brings into this team, they're not doing anything for us. I mean, given John Randall, he was a really good pickup, but really Holmgren had nothing to do with it. John Randall knew a couple of people on the team, and he favored Seattle over everybody else, so pretty much Holmgren only had to say, okay, you can play for the team. Sean Alexander was a mistake as well. They actually drafted him low in the first round of the draft, and they weren't really looking for him to be a starting running back. They were looking to trade him. And all of a sudden, Sean Alexander becomes really good, and Holmgren doesn't know what to do with him. He has Ricky Waters signed to the second highest running back salary in the league, only behind Marshall Faulk. And you really can't do anything but play him. I mean, you put him on the bench, and that makes you look bad. We're paying this guy all this money just to sit on the bench. So Sean Alexander was really at the short end of the stick here. We're talking about Seattle things. Let's go on to basketball. We have a really great news to report here. I mean, on January 31st, that was last week, the Washington State Cougars hosted the Washington Huskies. And we were in for a great game. They came in, and obviously they expected to win. Washington State hadn't won a Pac-10 game yet, and we weren't looking like we were going to win this one starting in the first half. We kept it close, just like most of our games, but it didn't look like we had that one thing that was going to pull us ahead. It wasn't until the second half started, and we started to get a little bit closer, that the game really got interesting. The fans were really into it. And by halfway through the second half, with about 5:44 left, the Cougars took their first lead of the game at 68-66. The teams bounced back and forth, each team trading baskets, until like about a minute to go, and the Cougars took the lead. With 0.3 seconds to go, though, Marcus Moore fouled Will Conroy of the Washington Huskies on a three-point shot. The score was 81-78, and it looked like they were going to be able to tie the game up. Unfortunately for the Huskies, he missed the last two free throws, and the Cougars went on to win 81-79. Now, who do we have to thank for this game? One man and one man only.
That would be me, because I was the one who told him to miss.
I'm sorry. That would be Marcus Moore. playing the entire 40 minutes of this game. Now, he was a baller tonight. He went for a block shot. He had a steal, 3 for 7 from the three-point line, a couple of assists, a couple of rebounds, and he had 28 points. 28 points, which made him the leading scorer for the Cougars this season.
Well, what do you say about McNair's performance of 20 points?
Oh, he was really good in the middle. I mean, he was helping him out. Every time he got past the ball, he pretty much made it.
There's one little story I just wanted to talk about. I was there in the audience a couple rows back from the floor, and standing up the whole game, of course, until the girl behind us told us to sit down so she could see her cheerleaders. I was sort of curious why a girl wanted to see cheerleaders in their underwear. But anyway, getting back on with basketball, there we were watching the game, and this guy from the Huskies named Barnard, something like that. Anyway, he gets the ball, gets on a fast break. He's going down. He has one of those little, like, I don't know who he is. He's the guy that sings some songs. Anyway, he has this pencil-thin mustache or beard going all the way around. So he's looking like all Mr. Cool Guy. He's one of those dudes that wears his socks pulled all the way up, you know, and his shorts going down so you see about an inch of his knee. Anyway, he gets the ball. He's on a fast break. He's going down for the basket. And it appeared to me that he wasn't sure what the heck he was going to do once he got there. He wasn't sure if he was going to do a simple layup. Was he going to slam the ball? He wasn't sure. I think it became apparent that he wasn't sure when he sort of did a mixture between the two and missed.
By the way, how many points did he finish the game with?
0. He took a couple shots and he missed every single one.
I guess that means he must have been the MVP for the Huskies that night. Well, the Cougars did pull out the game, and Marcus Moore has a lot to say here. He now leads the Pac-10 in steals per game at 2.4. He is now second in the league in assists at about 5.5 a game. This looks really good for him, and he's having one of his best seasons yet. As a sophomore, we have a lot to look forward to with Mr. Moore here.
That's one thing that hopefully through the show and through just promotion that more and more people will start going to the Cougar games. It's very discouraging to see the difference between the Cougars now and the Cougars 10 years ago. Granted, we're talking about a team that had Benny Hill and another gentleman by the name of Seltzer. I'm losing his first name. Anyway, we had all these great players 10 years ago. We went to the NIT tournament. Beasley Coliseum, which holds, you know, a couple thousand people, would be filled. I mean, the upper sections, there's people sitting on all areas. The stadium was rocking. It was a lot of fun. You know, it was definitely a home court advantage. These days, they have plastic tarps and bags covering the seats in the upper sections almost all the way around the whole entire Martin Stadium at Friel Court. They have the student section. 10 years ago, you had to get, just like with football, you had to get to the game a couple hours before the gates even opened. If you wanted to think about sitting on the wooden bleachers down below, you can now get there well after the gates open and get down there and sit a row or two back from the very front, from the floor. It's definitely a much different atmosphere. And I think that after this Husky game, the Cougs showed they have the ability. I mean, they played a good, hard game against the Huskies. They grounded out. The fans had a great time who were there. I walked away with a hoarse voice just like after football games. It was a great thing to see the fans who were there. They were all cheering, having a good time. And I think that more people going to those games would see that they do, indeed, have a great time at Cougar basketball game.
Final of the season with counting only records in the Pac-10 conference, go to a tournament which will be held in California in March 15th through the 17th. So Pac-10 will actually be part of March Madness. Every other conference has had these kind of tournaments, but the Pac-10 has been a little slow on catching the drift. It's a big moneymaker, and it's hard for me to believe that it took so long for them to actually come forward with this.
Could you explain a little bit about March Madness?
March Madness, that's where pretty much division winners and winners of these tournaments automatically get berths in the NCAA tournament. And what that means is they will become one of the 64 teams that play in the championships come April. The Pac-10 will send an automatic seed, whoever wins this tournament. And all Washington State has to do is get up to 8th place in the conference, and they automatically qualify for the Pac-10 tournament. They're sitting at 1-10 in the Pac-10 right now, 5-14 overall. And they're only 2 games back of the Oregon State Ducks. What that means is if they can beat the Huskies again, which we already know they will.
The Ducks, aren't they like number two in the nation or something like that in football? So that does carry over for basketball, right?
Not quite. And I'm sorry, I misspoke. That was the Oregon State Beavers that are in eighth place. Ninth place is the Huskies, and we're sitting at 10th currently right now. We're only two games back from that eighth spot, and if we can win two more games this year against those two teams, we can actually make it into that tournament. Get us in.
So that puts it on the fans to be at the games and show your support and help us win those games.
In fact, we do play the Oregon State team in Pullman this next game. We actually do have two more games that are coming up soon, and you can actually show your support for the Cougars by watching them on television. Come February 23rd, Oregon State is playing the Cougars on Fox, and the UW game is actually televised on Fox as well, February 27th. So you can tune in, watch those games. If you feel up to it, take a ride over to the Heck Ed Pavilion and watch us play over in UW. Get over there, maybe make fun of some of their fans. I mean, they are pretty ugly looking. Make fun of their mascot. I mean, it's a dog. They slobber all over the place.
And you could make fun of their coach, Mr. Bender.
And then you can cheer on our team. Maybe even rush the court as soon as we win, because it'll come down to that last game of the season. If we do win that last game of the season and a couple more before then, we will be in that tournament. Rush the court, maybe tear down the backboard. That'd be pretty cool. So we all know that the Cougars are doing pretty good this season, but we have to give a shout-out to Mr. Bush. We know he doubles as a football player and a basketball player, but...
And just as a quick side note, not at the Husky game, but the game just before that, he actually scored his 1,000th point as a WSU basketball player. And hopefully I didn't steal your thunder, Rhino, but let's give you the chance to do it again.
That's all right, Mr. Anderson. That was exactly what I was going to say, but he's only the 23rd person in WSU history to attain that goal. Now, we all know that Marcus Moore is eventually going to take over that throne as the highest scorer in WSU history, but we need to give Bush a shout-out right now. He's doing great. I mean, he's one of the top 10 in free throw shooting in the Pac-10 right now, and he's probably really close to the top 10 in the Nationals as well. Bush, of course, had to sit out a couple of games because he was doing something down in Texas, El Paso. I think it was a bowl game or something.
No, he was just down there soaking up the rays.
Soaking up the rays and the passes from Jason Gesser. And he missed a couple of games, including a game up here against USC, which we kind of fell apart in. I went to that game. We were doing pretty good in the first half, but USC just got to be too much for us towards the end. And it shows that if we can keep up with a team like that, who is now ahead in the Pac-10, we can keep up with pretty much anyone. I mean, the Pac-10 is one of the best conferences out there. Well-rounded from the top to the bottom, we can make it competitive in any game that we're in. It'll be good to watch the conferences and actually see how well the Pac-10 does in these tournaments that are upcoming.
Okay, I need to take a quick break and talk about a couple things that I'm required to. You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on 90.7 KZUU, brought to you by the ASWSU. ASWSU elections are up and running. To be the next ASWSU president or senator, simply go to room 337 of the Cub, or should I say Compton Union, and ask for an election folder. The application process ends February 18th at noon. So I suppose if any of our students here would like to be the next president of WSU, you get paid, what, $17,000 a month or something like that?
$17,000 a month. It's 125% of the student.
$125,000 a month? I'm all for that.
No, that's 125% of the student expenses is what the president and vice president get paid.
I think it costs me about $2,000 a month to live, so that puts it about, what, 25% of $2,000 is, I don't know, $660,000, something like that. I guess that's closer to $500,000. So you're saying they'll pay me $2,500 a month times 12 months just to be an ASWSU president? What does he do, sit in his office and do nothing?
Actually, the check is cut over the 12-month period that you'll be in office, because there is a lot of work that you'll have to do over the summer.
We're talking ASWSU president, not United States president. There's no army to march around or anything like that.
Yeah, but there are requirements. There's requirements like meeting with the city council and getting everybody ready for the fall.
Okay, you're making me yawn. I'm going to go to a song. We'll be back in about about 4 minutes, 3 minutes, and we'll talk a little bit more sports with Rhino.
We both knew we would. passing trees, passing signs along the road.
You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KCUU 90.7 FM, brought to you by the ASWSU. Currently in the studio is Rhino, and we're talking sports. We talked a little bit about the Super Bowl, and despite all of our complaining, in reality, I think we're both really happy that New England won. And aside from a few minor glitches, I think it was a great game. I enjoyed watching it. It was very entertaining. One thing we didn't talk about that we might want to touch on a little bit is the commercials they had in the Super Bowl. There are a couple that were definitely noteworthy. We talked about the WSU men's basketball game and their win over the University of Washington Huskies and their possibilities of actually going to the tournament. As we discussed earlier, they only have to win essentially three tournaments and they will be the national champions. It's as simple as that. It's essentially three wins. I think the Cougars can do three wins. I have faith. Coming up also, we're going to be talking about WSU basketball, intramural basketball, that is. And we're going to talk about the WSU club ice hockey team, who had an exhibition game over in Moscow against the University of Idaho Vandals and the outcome of that game. So getting back into our Super Bowl conversation, I'd just like to talk a little bit about the commercials that they had for a moment. I suppose if I were to have to vote for an MVP of commercials, first off, I'll throw a couple of them out there. You have, at the beginning of the game, you have the BattleBots one where the bot was going for the Bud Light and the hammer came out and just hit the holy living crud out of that BattleBot and just flattened it out. That would probably be one of the votes. You have the one following that one with the monkey and the musical where the CEO of E-Trade is like looking at the newspaper that had this big headline about the musical being the worst one at the Super Bowl. And he's like, a musical? And then the CEO found the monkey some work down in Florida. And following that one, there was the other, I think it was a Budweiser commercial where two guys were in a bar and one guy was helping another guy get a girl's affection. And one guy was feeding lines to the other guy, ended up feeding him the line. So how much would that cost? And one of the other commercials that I think would probably be of MVP quality, a little less, probably not quite as funny, but pretty cute all the same, was also another Budweiser commercial. We had a cowboy-looking older gentleman in a bar, and people are like saying, how you doing? How you doing? That kind of thing back and forth. And then every time somebody said it to this guy, he started going on, yeah, I just got in town, got picked up at the airport. And it's like he kept on doing that over and over again every time somebody came in and started saying, how are you doing and whatnot. I thought that was pretty humorous. And once again, that's probably one you'd have to see. What did you think?
Well, my personal favorite involved Mr. MVP himself, Barry Bonds, four-time MVP of the Major League Baseball.
Very good choice.
Now, it shows him warming up in a batting cage. Nobody else is there except the pitching machine, and suddenly he hears this voice urging him to retire. He hits a couple of more balls. They go foul, and it looks like he should consider retirement, even though he did break the home run record last year. A few more voices talk about he should retire, he's all washed up. And then all of a sudden, the voice slips, and Barry is tipped off as to who it is. We zoom into the announcer's booth, and we see Hank Aaron sitting there, the home run champ, and he's trying to urge Barry Bonds to retire because he thinks that Barry Bonds is eventually going to catch up to him for the all-time home run record. And I think that was the funniest commercial of the day because I could not stop laughing after watching that. Maybe it's just because I'm a diehard baseball fan, but I'm going to have to give out my thumbs down. Worst commercial is the Pepsi Britney Spears theme.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
That had to be the worst compilation I've ever seen. I don't know why they thought they could pull off something like that. What they did was they had Britney Spears dressed up as four different decades, and they had her dancing to music from each different decade. And the whole point was the home audience was supposed to vote which decade they thought Britney Spears best represented. And funny enough, they thought she was in the 50s, where she should have stayed.
Okay. Enough about the commercials. Let's talk a little bit about intramural basketball. We actually have an expert in the studio. Once again, it's our own sportsman, Rhino.
All right. The intramural basketball season got started last Sunday, and what that is teams from around the campus all get into a league, and they play each other. There are more than 100 teams in the intramural basketball season this year, and what I'm going to do from week to week here is give you an update on who the best teams are, who's playing the best, and even a top 10 list of the best teams. This week, we do not have that top 10 list because our intramural site has let us down. We couldn't get to the top 10 list. It was down this morning. So what I'm going to give you is the best team, I thought, from the first week of the season. That would be Sunday through Thursday of last week. Sunday night at 6 p.m., one of the co-ed teams named Mismatched won the game 62 to, I think the final score was 62 to 37. It was pretty much a blowout, but the thing that caught my attention was that the team that won was actually giving, there was a lot of sportsmanship going on there. They pretty much refused to take the 25-point mercy rule, which is in intramural sports. Once you get up by 25 points, the game is pretty much over. But they decided to let the other team keep playing just so they could get some time on the court. So they are going to be my number one pick for the past week. Now, I will give you the best team that I think from week to week and actually tell you what the top 10 are. We can give you an update on who the top 10 were last year. The team L2 finished with a 4-0 record and went through the playoffs like it was butter, and they ended up being the best team last year. Intramural sports, you can still join up on teams for the basketball season. What they have on the website now, which is at www.cub.wsu.edu.
Actually, there's no W's. It's just cub.wsu.edu/IM.
I stand corrected. On that website, there is a free agent list, and what you do is you just sign up your name there, your phone number, and I think they ask for your email address, and they can put you on a team. Teams actually look up for free agents because lots of teams end up with shortage of players. The intramural season actually goes for a couple more weeks here, and then the playoffs will start, and I will give you an update of when those playoffs do start. I'm actually on two teams myself, and we won't exactly talk about how well my team did or how well the other team did against us, because we didn't really stand a chance against an overmatched team. We went up against a team with 9 players on it. We had 6. They had a bunch of people over 6'5". They just pretty much looked at us, and we lost.
That wasn't on the 6-foot and under team, was it?
No, that was on the open division.
So I was going to say, I know the I'm not going to mention the team name because I actually respect this team, and we play against them in softball every year, but they had Rob Ramsey playing first base for him. And Rob Ramsey, if anybody doesn't know, is a professional baseball player, and he was playing on an intramural softball team last season.
I remember that. I mean, my team had a pretty good season last year. What place did our team finish in, Travis?
Actually, our team did not finish in first place. Depending on what you're looking at, we had first or second place in our division, and due to the forfeit of this one team, we're not going to mention their name. The team that beat us in the semifinals ended up by default winning the whole thing. Their name is the Railers. We lost to the Railers during the playoffs, beat them in the regular season. They're a good team, a bunch of scrappers. They went out. Anyway, we were pretty much in the second and third rating throughout the whole entire thing.
Yeah, I actually looked at the rankings on the baseball site, the softball site on the intramural page last night, and we were actually rated second at the end of the season, which was pretty good for us, one of our better seasons. We were pretty disappointed that we actually lost when we got to the finals, so we had a really strong team, and we're really hoping to come back this spring with an even stronger team. Intramural softball does start come spring. They have seasons in the fall and the spring, and to get a team together, all you have to do is get 10 people together and sign up on the forms. Over at the rec center, they have information for that out in the front. You can sign up for that kind of a team. They have sports ranging from like wiffle ball to golf to even cribbage if you're the kind of person who doesn't want to get too sweaty.
Very good. And more intramural sports information will be given around 8:30. And we also have a little bit of information about the WSU club ice hockey game that happened, I believe it was last Wednesday night, over at the University of Idaho against the University of Idaho Vandals. Excuse me. It was over at the county fairgrounds over in Idaho against the University of Idaho Vandals.
Yeah, that ice hockey game against the Vandals was an exhibition. And
exhibition, anyway.
It was a lot of fun. If you didn't go to that, you really missed out. The Cougs were playing the Vandals, and it was an excellent game. There were your typical hockey fights. There were at least two fights, and one person kicked out. And being a fan, that was very exciting. And you had the typical slamming people against the glass and watching the puck get hit at 100 miles an hour and nailing people as they jumped down in front of it. And goalies making wonderful saves, but eventually getting scored on. It was actually a high-scoring game. The final score was 7-6. And unfortunately, the Cougs lost. They were doing very good until about the last 2 minutes. And then they gave up two goals in a row, and they ended up losing. One of the unfortunate things about the ice hockey around here is that there's no rink as part of WSU. And that's really unfortunate. The Cougs have their home games in Spokane, and it makes it kind of hard to be a fan because that's quite a long drive to go watch one hockey game. You know, if you really like hockey, you should start signing petitions or letting people know that, hey, I really want to see hockey and I'd like to have a hockey arena built around here so that we could all watch those fights and watch people get slammed against the glass and moan and groan and all that fun stuff that comes with ice hockey.
Actually, after that ice hockey game, I think brought to the forefront the want of myself to go to the goalie clinic that the WSU club ice hockey team will be putting on later on. I don't have the date, and if you stay tuned around 8:30 when we get the intramural sports update, I will get a date for you. Anyway, we were going to go to a couple songs, station break, and when we come back, John Becerra Jr., he's the Daily Evergreen online editor. He is also a columnist for the Daily Evergreen. He'll be on the air talking about his job at the Evergreen, producing the websites. You're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM, brought to you by the ASWSU. This is the Peter Eichmann Show. Stay tuned. We will have John Becerra. And Monday, February 11th, from 8 to 9, we are going to have WSU football coach Rob Akey.
You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on 90.7 FM. Having trouble getting the word out about your club or event? Well, KZUU can help. KZUU offers public service announcements free of charge to people just like you who are looking to get the word out. Come fill out our form, available every day outside of Cub, room 311.
We have in the studio with us John Becerra Jr. Do you like having the junior on there?
Yeah, the junior's good.
All right. We got John Becerra Jr. He's the Daily Evergreen Online web editor, and he is also a columnist for the Daily Evergreen. You've probably seen some of his columns in the opinion page. And you can reach us in our studio at 509-335-2207 to talk to John about the Daily Evergreen and anything that you'd like to mention about the Daily Evergreen, the positive or, you know, maybe even some constructive criticism, should you have any. You can also get our website at www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES, as in the Peter Eichmann Show. Also, we have an online discussion board that the hosts, yours truly and Peter Mann, watch at wittybatter.com. And on the front page, there is a link directly to the website. So anyway, John Becerra, Becerra. I'm having problems here. He is the web editor for the Daily Evergreen. He just recently got promoted to this position. And we would like to talk to him a little bit about his background first, and then we'll go into specifically his job and what he does to make it so every day you can actually see the Daily Evergreen online. So how are you doing today, John?
Doing pretty good. It's a little early. A little early.
Yeah, I know. 5 o'clock in the morning comes around really quick, especially. I got a call this morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like stumbling to get to the phone, knocking everything off my desk, my shelves and whatnot. I get there and I'm like, hello, hello. Whoever it was hung up on me. And I was so mad because I'm like, my alarm clock's going off in 1 hour. I'm not going to get back to sleep. So I sat there and tossed and turned for another hour. Well, anyway, getting back to John, because he is actually our guest and not me. I'd like to ask a few questions of John, and I'll just sort of throw them all together, and then he can answer them however he sees fit. I'd like to know where John's from, what he's studying at WSU, what kind of career he hopes to pursue once he gets a degree from WSU, and do you have any pets?
Sounds like a personal ad or something. Well, I'm from Bremerton, Washington, 24 years old, studying broadcast production at WSU. What I hope to do for a career is hopefully something in the communication field, possibly on TV or for print media or online, whatever I can obtain as a job in that field. And as for pets, unfortunately, no. I'm allergic to cats. I'm not too crazy about dogs, and I had a hamster when I was in grade school, but unfortunately they died, so.
I have a good hamster story. A friend of mine had a hamster once, and they were moving one day, and they accidentally stepped. Pete is going to be calling any minute now about me laughing about the death of a poor little hamster. But anyway, they're moving, and in the middle of their moving, they set a box on top of the little hamster and squished the thing to death. Sorry, anybody who finds that not very humorous, you can give us a call at 335-2207 and give me an earful. Anyway, back with John once again. John, besides being a techie who's working on the Daily Evergreen, and actually if you go to dailyevergreen.com, you can see the website that John is in charge of each and every single day. And it's because of John that this website is currently up. And you can also blame him for any of the news that's on the site, too. If it's bad news, you know, how they say, kill the messenger, not the person who's, like, actually making the news be. Anyway, John likes sports. And I'd like to ask him what his favorite sports team is, what his favorite sports are. And this is going to be the tough one, I think, but I'll see. Who is the best WSU sports star of all time and why?
The pressure. Well, of course, since being from Bremerton, I've been there. I've lived there all my life, so obviously I enjoy the Seattle area teams. Obviously, the Mariners are my favorite. I also enjoy the Sonics and Seahawks. Not too crazy about hockey. Since we don't really have a franchise there, it doesn't really matter that much. As for WSU, man, I think I'm just going to have to go with Gesser. I'm only going to be here 2 years, but from the short time I've been here, I think he's got really all the tools to make it out there in the big world of the NFL. I think he's got the arm. I think he's got great scrambling ability. A concern would be the height, but then again, Doug Flutie's made a pretty good career out of his height, so, hey, it's not that bad.
Yes, Bud Webb was, 5'9", and he actually won the slam dunk championship in basketball, so height's not everything.
Yeah, height's not everything. But yes, I am a big fan of Gesser, and I did enjoy the season very much, so... It was pretty exciting. I was the sports weekend editor for the Daily Evergreen in the fall, and it was pretty cool to watch the team play and write glowing reviews about their games every week. And it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. And I think it was a really fun season this season, and I think next year will be even better. I mean, they're just going to be. They're just going to be so scary next fall. It's not even funny.
Yeah, and I think also we'll have a chance, like I said, next week, 8 to 9 o'clock. We're going to be talking with
Coach Rob Akey from the WSU football team, and we'll have a chance to talk to him about the prospects of next season and, of course, the season we just had and maybe the season before it and why there was such a difference between the two seasons. And were you here last year?
Yeah, I was here last year.
Okay, so you had a chance to see the WSU football team last year. You had a chance to see them this year. What do you think the, I mean, was it a year of maturity that was the difference? Because really the team was more or less the same.
I think so, too. I think it was more or less a thing of maturity. I think it was just a lot of inexperience and those inability to win the close games, especially against Arizona State on Dad's Weekend in Oregon. Those were two games that were just very, very close, and it was just a matter of those points they needed, and they just didn't get it.
Yeah, I think that's a difference of between winning those close games and losing those close games. I mean, we had like three overtime losses that, you know, the difference between three losses and overtime and the three wins overtime would have been a six-game swing. You know, I mean, that's an incredible swing. And, you know, our whole season pretty much, you could say, was lost on three overtime losses. And, you know, so really the WSU football team, though it on paper was a really bad season last year, as a fan and somebody who went to all the games, you knew that it wasn't a bad team. It was just, you know, a lot of really lousy luck in a row. And like our guest Dave Patterson last week said, you know, the difference between, you know, a team that's hot and winning streak and a team that's cold, you know, on a losing streak is the fact that the team that's on the winning streak is winning those close games, and the team that's on the losing streak is winning or losing those close games. And essentially, you know, the winning team won the game they should have lost, and the losing team won, lost the game they probably should have won, you know, and it's just sort of one of those things. And I think the Cougs this year got over the hump. Okay. Just quickly going back to the Seattle Mariners, who is your favorite Mariner of all time?
Man, you're going to put me on the spot here. You know, I'm really going to have to go with Griffey. I was a big fan of his ever since he came on the scene back in 89, and that was just, it was just amazing to watch him play. And unfortunately, it was just really sad to watch him go out the way he did. Although I do respect his wish to play closer to home and try to play closer to family, it still was just a rather awkward situation. Unlike the Randy Johnson situation where he just wanted out and didn't really give a damn, just wanted to go, so we said okay. And then, of course, the A-Rod fiasco, which I'm still upset over. Oh, man. Wish I had $200 million over 10 years.
Well, actually, 252, but who's counting, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we got a little bit of John's sports background taken care of. Now let's talk about technical background. I'm curious, what kind of technical background do you have? If you've taken any kind of specific computer training classes or any classes in the computer industry at all while here at WSU or maybe while back home or on your in your spare time, what your favorite operating system is, and what is your background in web development, and how has this helped you in being the web editor for the DailyEvergreen.com?
Okay, see, this is the point where the knowledge level drops off considerably. For I have taken no classes, I have no experience. The only reason I am able to do the voodoo that I do, to coin a famous phrase, is because the editor before me was gracious enough to come up with an automated system where I could go in and update the site from there. As for my favorite operating system, I'm not really sure. I'm in the process of figuring out whether to throw my computer out of the window because I have Windows ME on there and the thing keeps crashing, so.
Yeah, Windows ME is pretty much at the bottom of my list of operating systems I'd ever want to use. So.
Really? I've heard that before. I've heard quite a few people say, oh, Windows ME, what are you doing that for?
Yeah, you might as well just go DOS 6.2 and Windows 3.1.1. That's that's wow. About as good as ME, you know what I'm saying?
That's going back there. That's going back to my first computer in the AOL 3.0 and all that fun stuff.
All righty. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about your specific role about at the Daily Evergreen Online and what specifically your expectations are, what's expected of you on a daily basis.
Okay. What's expected of me is basically I come in at night about 10 o'clock and I get the pages of what's going to be out on the newspaper the next morning, and I simply go in through News Edit Pro and just fix everything, make sure everything's going to be updatable, and load it through a transporter, get rid of the old classifieds, and resize the images and the comics for the site, and that's about it. Doesn't really take that much. Doesn't really take that much time, and it's pretty easy once you get used to it.
Okay. Do you have any other functions at the Daily Evergreen?
Yes, actually, I am a columnist at the Daily Evergreen as well. I write occasional columns whenever they get published. Unfortunately, due to advertising cutbacks, there's only room for one page on there, so it's a real cat and dog fight to get columns on there.
You recently wrote a column that appeared a few days ago, and it was about the cold weather we have around here, and then you had actually somebody respond to it with a letter to the editor. Did talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I. It's kind of funny because I wrote a letter. I mean, I wrote a column about the weather and how we were going to be all be threatened to be buried alive by a blizzard or some other thing. This guy writes this letter talking about how this weather isn't nothing until you've lived in places such as Minnesota and other places that are world renowned for their winters. And I'm just sitting there going, man, it was just my attempt at a Weaver column. And obviously I didn't do a very good job at
a Weaver column.
Yes. A Weaver column. Our famous columnist, Matthew R. Weaver, who I know isn't probably listening at this time, but if he is, what's up, man? How you doing? Give us a call if you're alive or not. But yeah, it was just a attempt at trying to write a funny column, and some people got it, and obviously that guy didn't.
Okay. How long does it take you each night to put an issue of the Daily Evergreen online? And you did mention that you use News Edit Pro and you edit and size pictures and whatever else like that. What program do you use to size your pictures? And with News Edit Pro, what exactly is that?
Well, News Edit Pro is basically a system in which we go through and write our stories, and they're separated by section. And since we also subscribe to the Associated Press Wire, there's a lot of yeah, no, not news, but similar sections to that. Anyways, it's just a system where it's not where I used to work at back home on the paper down there, where we write it all in Microsoft Word and just be on the computer, and if it was there, it was there. If it was not, then we had to go digging through the hard drive and things of that nature. So anyways, it's just a nice little system. It's just
organize all the news and everything?
Yes.
Okay.
All the news and columns and everything. We were going to have it, so we were going to have the pictures and cut lines on there as well, but unfortunately, our previous advisor was let go, so that system wasn't able to be fully implemented. I use Adobe Photoshop 6.0 to resize the photos. And time, really, now with this automated system, takes about maybe 45 minutes to an hour. Once I get used to it, probably won't take more than 45 minutes, which is really good because the former web editor told me about the web editor before him and how he had to go through and code everything and change it through the website, which of course took hours. And if you made a mistake, then of course it didn't show up, so you'd have to go back through and fix it. So this automated system really makes it easier for me.
Okay, describe the automated system and how it works for you.
Well, I believe it's Dreamweaver that's set up, and basically it's just the same way anyone out there who has a website and is the administrator of a website would go through and upload everything and make sure they upload and update there. So,
okay, you said there was some sort of thing that the previous web editor had put in place to make it easy for you to do it. What was it that he put into place? Some sort of program or something that you use every day to, I mean, like, how do you decide, or how is it, I guess, that you go through and, there's like a main article or two or three on the front page, and then on the left-hand banner, there's, you know, several articles that get archived back and everything like that. I mean, do you go through by hand and, you know, cut and paste those things in there, and then day by day move the links and sort of move them down, or how does that work?
That's pretty much it, really. It's just going through every night and going through that admin menu and just making sure the headlines are in place, and also in the this week section, just make sure those stories are in there. I'm not sure of the exact system he uses, but it's just
it's automated.
Yeah, it's automated, so makes my job easier.
Okay. I know that to make the Daily Evergreen Online actually appear online, you are not the one and only person who does that, obviously. You don't write all the stories. You don't take all the pictures. You don't write all the code. You don't do everything. You just do one portion of it. But your job, of course, is very important in the whole scheme of things, because if you don't do your job, it actually doesn't get updated. Everybody else could do their job, and it still would never appear online unless you did your job. Could you tell me a little bit about the other people who are behind the scenes, you know, specifically writers, their editors, photographers and their editors, web developers, their editors, namely you, and anybody else, and just sort of go through a little bit of what it takes to get a copy of the Daily Evergreen Online, sort of from the perspective the best you can from those other people and their jobs in order to do that?
Okay. Well, I've been at the Daily Evergreen now this is my fifth straight semester. I even spent time here during the summer, which is another story unto itself. But really, it's just a lot of work that people put into. A lot of people give up their time for classes and things to go out and chase some of these stories. Sometimes it's just simple as making a couple of phone calls. Other times you've actually got to get out and interview people. And there's a lot of very, very hard workers, very talented people. Our editor, Tanya Ricks, I'd say almost brilliant with designing pages and stuff. She was an A&E opinion editor last year, very good at that job. Our managing editor, TJ Conrads, he's only a sophomore, and he's already second in command. He's a very talented writer, and also a fairly funny guy. He's pretty much our newsroom comedian. We also have our news editor, Emily Wagnitz, who simply comes in and does her job every day, and she does it very well, and it's just excellent the way she gets out there and gets news for everyone. And then we also have our section editors, Brian McLean for sports, Jennifer Jackson for A&E, Lynn Servinsky for opinion. Just all very hardworking people that put a lot of time and effort into their pages to make it come out well. And of course our photo editor, and also our web manager, Sarah Goodwin. God bless her soul. who decided to take two jobs this semester. Why, I don't know, but she's doing two jobs, and she's doing it to the best of her ability. And I just think that's really saying a lot when you can take two jobs in an industry that changes daily, that needs new content daily, and if you don't have that, then you don't have a paper, and then everyone doesn't know what's going on. And of course, the writers and photographers, and there's too many people to mention, but they definitely work very hard to put this paper together and get it out to everyone. For the website, I know there's me, and there's our main guy, Dave. I'm not sure what his last name is. I apologize if he's listening right now. And then, of course, our other web tech, Michael Anderson. Pretty nice guy. I just met him this semester, but he's a cool guy. And he puts up with my complaints when I come in the morning and say, "Hey, man, this didn't update, or there was this error. Can you figure out how to fix it?" And he sighs, and he goes, "Oh, okay." And he goes and does it. But he's a pretty cool guy, and he puts in a lot of work, too, and I definitely appreciate him.
Okay, thank you for that. We're going to go to a song. When we come back, we'll have Dave Patterson or somebody else from the intramural office talking about intramurals and the intramural update for the day. And we will come back and talk some more with John.
Oh, John. I'm just too glad to have you here at this historical occasion. Just relax while I play you some nice, quiet music.
My hands. Thank you.
as he leaves his shop with the dog 3 cents on a leash. He has every reason to be pleased because the night before he brought off one of the most difficult feats of sorcery. He entered a man's dream and walked all over it as if he owned the place. He moved the scenes around with the deftness of a director from the Hollywood Pantheon. He called the shots, edited the script, and gave the demons their cue.
I have with me on the phone the Intermural Sports Office. Is this Ryan?
Yes, this is Ryan.
Hey, Ryan, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good.
All right. Well, for Intermural Sports, we have the Basketball League, which has been going on now. We're entering the second week, and everything has been going good. We got lots of ballers out there. Maybe a few of them could try out for the team next year. But everything's going real well. Everybody seems to be happy. A lot of close games, everything. So... looks like that's going to continue to be some fun for the next couple weeks. We also just started last night, Super Bowl Sunday, of course, 4-4 flag football, and that went pretty well. A little cold. People kind of still want to stay home and watch the game, but everything should pick up in the next couple weeks. And we also started wiffle ball, and that went real well, and that's also just began Saturday. But the up-and-coming events that you guys can still enter are the sports trivia, and we'll be taking entries at the Student Rec Center from January 22nd to February 4th, and then that will be held February 5th. So if you're feeling pretty knowledgeable about your sports, come and sign up. And also we're going to have a bowling league, which the sign-ups are going to be taken January 31st through February 10th, and the entries for those are going to be taken at the Cubs game area. And that should be a lot of fun also. So anything else you'd like me to add?
Yeah, if somebody wanted to get on a team for flag football or the wiffle ball or anything, is there anything they can do about it now that the actual sign-up deadline has passed?
They can't form their own team right now, but you could go to the free agents list and sign up there. Or if you just want to come out, if you know somebody that's going to play, you could be added to their team. And if you don't know, you can come out to the game, find out. There's always teams that are short a couple people, and they'd be more than happy to pick you up as a player for them so they wouldn't have to forfeit. So, yeah, there's always a good chance. Just stop on by the Smith office in the Smith gym, and they'll point you to a way to be able to sign up.
Okay, isn't there a way online that you can get on the free agents list?
Yeah, you just go to... http://cub.wsu.edu/im, and there's a tab on the top of the page. It's free agents, and all you do is you click on the free agent list, indicate which sport you want, and then you'll be able to sign up for that. And then the captains, if they do need somebody, can look on that list, your email's on there, send you an email message, and invite you to their games.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, Ryan.
No problem.
We look forward to talking to you or somebody from your office next Monday about the same time.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too. Bye. Bye.
All righty. That was, once again, Ryan from the Intramural Sports Office. And we are going to get back with John after one more song.
Thank you. Minnesota since I do not read it.
You are listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM, brought to you by the ASWSU. In the studio, we have John Basura, Jr., the Daily Evergreen online editor, and we have been talking about the Daily Evergreen and the people behind the scenes who make the Daily Evergreen happen and who make the Daily Evergreen online happen. We're going to continue the interview with John, and if you have any questions about the Daily Evergreen Online, or any of his columns he's ever written, he's more than happy to take your call at 509-335-2207. You can visit our website at www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES, and from there you have a link to thedailyevergreen.com, or you could just go to dailyevergreen.com. Also, if you want to talk about this online, we have a discussion board at wittybanter.com. That's wittybanter.com. And on the front page there, there is a link straight into our discussion board. You also can get to our discussion board from our website. And once again, here's Johnny. All right, John. In the future, I know you just got your job, your position as the web editor at the Daily Evergreen. But and I know that you're still trying to get used to the job and, you know, make everything run smoothly. I'm sure after a couple weeks now, you have a pretty good handle on it and everything. So now you're certainly able to focus on other parts of the Daily Evergreen Online. I'm just curious, what kind of special projects do you have planned? Do you have any specific goals for the Daily Evergreen Online that you specifically are going to try to undertake and achieve? And if so, what kind of steps are you going to take to achieving those goals?
Well, first of all, our goals are primarily to try and get the online site read as much as people read the paper. Some kind of special projects we want to try to do is try to get more original content online. I know last spring the previous web editor wanted someone to write a column, so I said, hey, I'll write a column. So I wrote a column a few times, and they got published, and that was all fine and dandy. But I think we want to go farther than that. We want to go more columns. We want to go with stories that are just online, and also stories that run in the paper. We also want to try and not only get links to sites with more information, maybe have articles relating to that specific article that are just online as well. Also, what we want to try to do is try to get some maybe some series going for the online site. Try to get some packages put together, maybe a couple webcams. We're also in the midst of trying to get a discussion board going, so people who see who read the articles and read the opinion columns and read the sports and the A&E pages and want to comment on our articles or bitch at us for some mistake we made or want to praise us for a really excellent article. We're trying to put that together. We're in the process of doing that now. I'm not sure when that's going to come together, but we're trying to get that together really soon. Basically, what we want to try to do is get the online site try to get that independent of the Evergreen itself. And it's definitely going to take more than a semester. It'll take more than a semester that I'm going to be here for, but hopefully we can set that foundation so other people out there who'd say, hey, I want to get more experience online, and we can tell them, then come on down and work for us, and you can definitely get some experience. And definitely, it's also definitely a great place to get experience, especially now that more and more newspapers are starting to focus their content online. There's a lot of, I've noticed on quite a few websites, there's a lot of web original content and links to other sites and videos and all that sort of thing. So that's what we want to try to do, is come up with something like that.
The history of the Daily Evergreen Online, this might be a little bit sort of throwing it into your court without you having a lot of information about it, but as having been part of the Daily Evergreen print version for the last five semesters, I'm sure your opportunity to look at and read the normal Daily Evergreen website has been there, and you've had the opportunity to see it grow and change through the different web managers. And this is something that a lot of university departments have a problem with students who are in charge of the websites. The student will come in and build a website, and it will get finished to mostly finished. The semester of the year will be over with, and the student will be on their way, and then a new student comes in, has to pick up the pieces from where the previous student left off, and finds that it's easier to sort of build a new site altogether. So every year the site is always changing its look, changing its format, changing its style, getting in different, getting more or less better, I guess you could say. And the Daily Evergreen has a new format compared to its old one as well. It was put in by the last web manager, and his version of it actually is, first, it has a very nice look to it. I believe it's also won some awards for the look. He's also made it in such a way that people with little technical expertise can actually go in and make it happen. So you don't have to have some high-paid tech guy. You just need somebody with a little bit of computer knowledge and the ability to go in and update the site from some sort of administrator module where it's, a bunch of pull-down menus. So anyway, I'd like if you could talk a little bit about the history of Daily Evergreen's website, how it's changed over the years, and how it compares to the current site, and how the current site, I guess, if this is your opinion, where if you believe the current site is better than all the previous sites, why is it better? Or if there is previous sites that were better, why the previous sites are better than the current site?
Man, quite a bit to follow. Well, since I've only been here, I haven't been here for that long. I really can't say about the history of the site, but I know previously when I was here for my first year, it was basically just a site where we'd have the big picture, probably some wild art there and some stories, and there wasn't much there wasn't much content to be found on there. That all changed last spring when the previous editor Ryan Ford came in and sat down with a web manager and a web editor and said, okay, this is how I want the website to look. And they sat down with the blackboard and they just went over it for I don't know how long. I just came up with the design you see today. I really enjoy this layout. I think it's simple. I think it's easy to access. Maybe the only thing we really want to change is the colors, but of course that's just a purely aesthetic thing. So,
okay, the colors that you're talking about. Actually, I find that I sort of enjoy the colors. I like the I like how each of the different sections has its own very unique separate color, and I'm one who I sort of like grays, different shades of gray, and I like the way it works out and everything. And I sort of understand that the web manager is not in favor of that gray color.
No, actually, that's one of the things that we put on our master list to do this semester was to change the colors, and that was one thing that was going to go was the grays because she just wasn't happy with it.
That's sort of funny. It's a gray world out there, especially in the newspaper world, yet she doesn't like it on her website, huh?
No, I'm not sure what kind of ideas she has for the colors for it, but we'll probably come up with something. I'm not either for or against the colors. It doesn't really.
So as a web editor, how much of a say do you have for the content of the Daily Evergreen? Are you forced to use solely those articles which are being published in the Daily Evergreen print version? Or do you have a little bit of freedom to pull out a few other articles that aren't being printed and things along the lines of opinion columns? Because you had mentioned now that the Daily Evergreen has their budget has shrunk up and the opinions page is not as large as it used to be. And obviously there's more than just one or two people writing opinions and letters to the editor and everything. Do you have the freedom as the web editor to include those on the website even though they were never put in print?
Man, that's a really good question. I haven't really talked about that because basically the website right now is just a reflection of the paper as a whole. But I think if I could sit down with Lynn, our opinion columnist, and Tanya and talk about that, and then maybe have to sit down with our budget person for the website. I think it's Al Donnelly, who's also the advertising manager. I think if I sat down and maybe talked with them and say, hey, you know, since there's only one page for opinion, how would you guys feel if more columns were printed online and see how that would go? Well, that's a good idea because there are quite a few people that do write columns. And unfortunately, with trying to fit in letters to the editor and possibly staff editorial, but mostly just trying to fit in those letters and Simon are heavily sedated in the thumbtacks. There's usually only room for one column. So,
Thumbtacks?
Yeah, basically they're a daily thing where we do thumbs up, thumbs down to certain things on campus and certain things that go on around the school.
Who chooses whether it's going to be thumbs up, thumbs down, and who chooses what things you're giving a thumbs up and thumbs down to?
I think that's decided at the staff meeting. Usually, that's the way it was done last year. I don't know if it's changed or not since I don't hang out in the newsroom much since I work online, but that's the way it used to go.
Is the thumbtacks, are those something able to be found online as well?
Actually, no. Not quite yet. I don't think we've come up with any way to really get them online right now. I'd probably have to sit down with one of the techs and say, hey, can we put the thumbtacks online? Is there, what's the coding for that? And just really try to get that online. But that might be something to do.
Okay, so is the web editor, as the guy who's in charge of making the newspaper come out on a daily basis, you're going to be gone in one semester, I believe you said, at pretty much the end of the school year here. What legacy do you want to be left? What legacy do you want to leave behind?
Hmm. Well, basically, I just want to leave something that people will be able to build upon. I know they're building a new Murrow Center in the next couple of years. Fortunately, I'm not going to be around for that, but there's going to be a lot more technology and more updated technology to better help the students. And hopefully, what I want, the legacy I would like to leave, is something that will set a foundation for other students to get out there and get behind and help them become even better than we were and really go out and make some changes. It's just something that we can look back on and say, hey, we were a part of that, and we helped build that, and that's really helping other people out.
Well, that's good. You said there's going to be a new Murrow Center. Are they tearing down that building and building a new one, or are they just adding on to it, or what's going on there?
What I've heard is that they're going to build it in the parking lot of Murrow. I'm not sure whether they're going to tear down a new building or not, but that's what I've heard. They're going to build a brand new building with with a brand new TV studio and a brand new office, so we won't have to use the crappy studio. Because I also I'm also in Broadcast 455 this semester, and of course that's production, so I work on the news there as well. So they're just putting up with the equipment there. It's
old and outdated.
Yes, old and outdated. And with this new building, they will get the latest technology, which will help them out. But unfortunately, wasn't there for us. So we'll have to just make do with the bachelor's degree and the numerous amounts of money paid back for student loans. But
with the inferior degree, huh?
No, not an inferior degree.
Just an inferior education.
Well, no,
I'm putting words in your mouth. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I think it's just your education is only as good as you make it. If you put in a lot of work, then your education will really benefit you. If you don't, then you're pretty much just hanging out and getting drunk at the bars.
Hey, whatever floats your boat, I suppose. I guess before we sign off for the day, I'd like to ask John if he has anything else that he'd like to talk about, any quick plugs he wants to put out there for something coming up, and see what John says.
Not much, really. Just continue to read our paper and check out our website. And by all means, don't feel that you have to don't feel like you can't say anything to us. If you recognize us walking to class or walking Glentaro Mall or wearing a cub or just anywhere on campus, just come up and say, hey, I really like this or I really don't like this. And let us know, because we really want people to feedback on us, because we're a newspaper for the students. And if the students don't let us know what they want to see and what they like and what they don't like and things of that nature, then we really can't benefit them. So hopefully students will just, and not only students, but faculty and staff, because to a lesser extent, they're also a part of it as well, but they can definitely, anyone can give us a call, stop us in the hall on Glentaro Mall, come on down to the newsroom, say, hey, I have a comment, or I have a question, or I have a concern, and let us know, and we'll try to help you guys out.
Thank you, John, for your time today, coming in so early in the day.
Hey, thanks. It's been fun.
All right. Once again, that's John Becerra, Jr. of the Daily Evergreen online editor and the one of the Daily Evergreen columnists. And we earlier had Rhino with sports and Ryan from the Intramural Sports Office talking about intramural sports. And this morning we talked about the National ID card and its merits or lack thereof. Next week we have WSU football coach Rob Akey on from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock talking about WSU football and the new recruits. Rhino will be back with more sports. We'll have our intramural sports